Broadsiding tackling linebacker. Broadsiding of linebacker. Broadsiding strong. Pulls away to win the Champagne Stakes by 3/4. Magic Time is the pursuer. It's Amenable in front from Magic Time. They'll fight it out. Amenable a half in front of Nick. Magic Time looms on the outside and went on by. Magic Time get up to the...
Rock, but the leader is SD Feedy, is coming clear from Hungary to Caulfield, is going to take out the Mornington Cup.
Straightening up now in the Quokka overpass as Fuhrer going toe-to-toe. They're giving each other the big eyeball. Red Canman joined them both, though. A length and a half uncommon. James letting down. Where's Amelia's duel? Back in the field, but running on strongly as Fuhrer. Overpass. Red Canman. 100 left to go. Overpass as Fuhrer. Amelia's duel.
Now on PG Podcast Network, it's time for the year-round carnival with Vince Accardi and your host, Racetrack Rolfie.
It's Overpass in front, though, from Oscar's Fortune, Amelia's Jewel. Overpass, too good for them again.
We tricked you. I bet you thought we've accidentally played last year's Quokka. Absolutely not. We intentionally did that. Of course, with a bit of Neil Young's foreign work. Last year's Quokka, this year's Quokka, over and over again as Overpass beat Amelia's Jewel, and also before that, the two Group 1s in Sydney, the Champagne and the All Age in the Bog, and the Mornington Cup, which was a spectacular race to watch. Not a spectacular race if you took a quad, you don't doubt about that at all. All the audio there, of course, courtesy of Sky Racing and Racing.com. Good morning, Vince Accardi.
Good morning, Ralphie.
Oh, man, did we have a little bit of everything? Let me start with this, because we can have a look at Randwick. On our update podcast, you said one thing. You are not going to play if the track is much worse than expected. Did you play?
No. Oh, I mean, we were heavy track after the first race.
Yep.
Oh, it was already heavy because it was raining. It's not even just... I've got to put it in the right spot. It's not just because it's a heavy track. It's because look what it turns into.
So I've got a couple of questions. Let me throw these in along those lines from Mark. Yep. What did Vince think the real track rating was for race one at Randwick? How could they put up a soft six? I know it was heavy eight in retrospective. From Steve and from Steve, hi, Ralphie and Vince. I understand there was rain on Saturday during the races, but it was only 9 mil, I heard. Why is there such a deterioration in the track compared to the week before when there was 200 mils a day prior? So there's a couple there from our members.
Yeah. Well, this is it. As the track curators have explained to me in the past, or the people from the ATC, Randwick's fantastic, holds all the rain, but if it rains when they race, it's just got major problems. And this, we've seen it all through that very, very wet period that we had, that everything was a disaster, particularly once the rain falls. And I was well and truly prepared. I mean, obviously, I'm wishing for it not to be the case, but unfortunately, this is what happened, and it was just a horrible look as well. Look, you could see it. Like, honestly, Warrnambool race is better. And I'm being serious here. Warrnambool race is better than Randwick when rains come with a tractor in the day.
Wowee. So that first race, and this is that answers the question there, only minus one below benchmark on adjusted times. What was the raw times by race one?
Okay, so this is how the day kicked off. Race one, the winner was 14.2 lengths below benchmark.
So that's raw, unadjusted.
Unadjusted, so that's H8, borderline. right on the cusp. I mean, the last three horses ran between minus 33 and minus 80, right? But that's okay. This, it just, the music's good. Race two, the winner, -23.3. This is like 35 years of records, Ralphie, or more, right? 1,281
races. On the OBR report, 1,281 records.
Yeah. So there you go, -23.1. Then race three, -25.4. Now, the averages are a lot higher. We're just talking about the winner, right?
Yes, of course.
The others are all around the 30s. Race four, where there was the controversy, -34, we'll just call it. -5, 1,200-meter sprint, small field, -23.5. Race six, -22.6 for the easy winner. Race seven. Oh, you love this, Ralphie. This is gold heavy. I'm telling you, they got to put new scales in. -46.5. Okay, we're going to take away 10 lengths of early speed because they went beyond hurdle pace, -30 lead speed, right? So we'll take 10 off, right? That was hot, -20. That was a heavy 20. Race eight, the big race of the day, and they're running along. They're not walking. They're going -33 overall. I love that. Love it. And there you go. And then they called it off. What a miracle.
It was unbelievable. It was called off straight after the two group ones were run. Extraordinary.
Realistically, it needed to be called off 100% before race seven, right? Yep. I mean, there's the proof, right? But they didn't, and I get it. Look, I get it. You've got to get the money in. You've got to get the revenue. You paid a whole lot of I understand it all. It's just sad that Randwick has this issue that when the rain falls during the day while they're racing, they have got nightmares. And this is the same for Rose Hill, by the way. It's both tracks, so they must, you know, collaborate together.
That is extraordinary. And I still can't always use the benchmark, to use your phrase, of Flemington, given that I was walking in the course at the time. The rain had hit Saturday, race morning of the Cross Counters Melbourne Cup. There's no way they could probably race. If they do, it would be a swamp, and it ended up being, a G5 by the end of the day. That's a whole track that can handle the drainage, and that's obviously what happens when you put the work in and are prepared to really do some long-term planning.
Long-term planning, all those things.
Yeah.
We've seen how remarkable Randwick is with, you know, beyond normal rain, they race.
Yeah.
Because the draining system at Randwick is sensational, but don't race on it when they're racing. You know, like if they're racing and the rain comes down, it's gone. It's over. It's just sad. But anyway, they still raced eight races. It was interesting. There was really no surprises for me on the day. So, yeah.
Look, we'll get into it, but just a mindset thing, and you often talk about this. And it is tough when you put so much work into your analysis pre-race. Now, that's you personally, and then there's customers, and there's people who, unlike you, who are working full-time on the analysis. They've got their own jobs, and then Saturday's their relaxation day. But the reality is, if you really want to have that right mindset, there are days where you go, you know what, I cannot lose if I keep my hand in my pocket.
This is – well, when you're doing it full-time, and this is what we do, we wake up and we just – focus on horse racing every day, all day. The reality is this. We want to watch great competition like everybody else, and we like to have a bet like most other people, right? But money is it's a dangerous tool, and it has to be respected, and it has to be understood mentally in its own isolation. It can't just be, oh, well, I've got the money in my pocket, I can do it, or I might need it. It needs to be respected as its own weapon, because it is a weapon, and it's a weapon of destruction in all facets if it's not understood correctly and managed in the right way. And I mean this, you've got to take care. It doesn't matter. It can be horse racing, it can be anything. It can be very destructive tool. You can have a lot of money and it can be extremely destructive, and it can absolutely ruin you as a person mentally and do all sorts of nasty things to you, because you may do things that you wouldn't normally do, and some of them could be bad, right? And if you have very little money, it can also be destructive because you're wanting to turn that into something that might be beyond the fantasy. I don't know, but all I know is respect it, treat it as its own entity, because that's what I do. I treat it as its own entity. Money, I am absolutely ruthless with it. And sometimes I'm an idiot, sometimes, but not very often, Ralphie, because when I was young, I used to get beat down. Lucky for me, that I understood my personal weaknesses, that I used to like spending money by making money. I mean, I was 13 years old, 14 years old, working in a fruit shop part-time, and I come home and make more money than my dad, and he's working full-time. And then he'd give me a clip over the ear and say, hey, shut up. You're living in this roof. Who's got the house? Who provides you the food? So what are you going to do with the money? You've got to put it away. So I used to give it to my parents. When I was a tradesman, I wasn't allowed to open up the nose days at the pay slips. You're not allowed to open it up. Oh, if I opened up that pay slip, man, I'd be in a beatdown.
Pass it over.
It gets to the mum and it gets put away. So then when your glory day comes, they say, son, you're going to get married. You better go and get that house. Right. So this, it's about working hard, respecting the money. And then me, I used to like spending it, right? When I'm, you know, like in my early 20s and all that, you know, on the horses, of course, and losing. I realized that if I was making money, what I had to do is I had to get rid of the money and create debts, you know, whether, like for me, it was through property. And basically, that kept me honest. And then it made me really appreciate how important money is and how it needs to be managed in the right way. So here's a situation. Like, if I'm prepared to spend 60 units on a day, man, I need as many favors as I can in my way within reason. It's not because I don't want to bet on a heavy track. I just know it's impossible for anybody to work out where they're going to be, what they're going to do, and who's going to handle, who's not going to handle it. So therefore, from a 25% chaos theory, you go to about 70. So that means I'm a high probability of losing my money. And then, okay, let's say you have the money and it's not an issue. And you know, even if it's, you know, for a little bit better than just entertainment reasons, how do you deal with yourself mentally after the event? Now, I have had days in the years gone by where I'll drop, you know, like just in one race, 20 or 30. And seriously, Ralphie, can't speak to my wife, can't speak to anybody. Get the vomit bucket out, and it's a dark place. It's a dark place. So this is the challenges that I faced on many occasions in horse racing. And that's the money side. Then there's the other side. Like, the reason people always ask me, Ralphie, why do you bet a lot more for the place? How come you don't have so many bets? Well, a few things. Number one, I've had many experiences when I used to back them for the win only and have 22 straight losing races. How do you think you feel? Well, all your money's gone. Like, it's all gone. Completely. And this, you know, story about, but I'll bet 1% of my bank, that 1% of my bank, that's good management. Well, that's a whole new podcast that we can do discussing the management of money, whether it's in racing or other things. Anybody that does that, unless it's a robot and you're working the strategy, you are headed to in one direction, down the tube, losing it all. Because what happens is a tipping curve. You do the mathematical analysis. There is a tipping curve when you reach a certain juncture of losses against your percentage of 1%, because you're always betting down, right, to preserve your bank. But what happens is there's this tipping point. Once you pass that tipping point, it doesn't matter how many winners you get, right? Unless you win something like the lotto, you can't get that bank back. And all that does is it mentally distracts you from being your best. It actually creates chaos within yourself. So I had to learn, for me as a person, how to do the shadow work on me and work out all my absolutely stupidity, all my weaknesses, and look at the dark things and sit with them and understand, why am I doing this? Like being your own psychologist, right?
Yeah.
And learning about yourself, and then coming to the, and then getting professional help about things that we might not have the skills. Say, okay, here's all my beating. How can I make it better? You know, like, you bust your backside, you work, I don't know, just say 100 hours a week average, and at the end of the year, you think you're a genius because you made 40 grand. You say you're the biggest dickhead on the planet. 40,000? Are you joking with those sort of hours? What is it, $2 an hour in a, you know, in a society that we live in? Like, that would have been my worst paycheck in my entire, well, I was making more than that at 15, 16.
Yeah.
So it just makes you realize, right, you've got to get all your fundamentals right. But firstly, you've got to respect the money. You have to respect. And if you respect it, oh, my goodness, it does look after you, and it takes a long time. This is the same as building banks, Ralph. It takes a long time. It doesn't happen in 1 week.
No, a couple of things. So, one, you said the chaos theory. So, you've touched on it many times on the podcast, but just for those picking up for the first time, the 25% that you said, and you said gets up to 70%, is 25% of all races, you're already factoring in that something can happen that you're not predicting.
Correct. Because we're not that good. No one's that good.
Yes.
There isn't a person on the planet. They might say there is. I'd love to talk to them. I really, really would, because I haven't found them.
So I read a book last year called Chaos Kings, How Wall Street Traders Make Billions in the New Age of Crisis by Scott Patterson. So there's a little recommendation. Oh, I might even put a link on our bio and on our podcast for people who want to get it themselves. But he had a line from Nassim Taleb, which is, because you just reminded me of it out of the blue when you said the 22 losses in a row, ruin is forever. So yep. After you're ruined, it doesn't matter what fucking theories you got, because you're gone.
Well, Ralphie, it's so interesting you say that. There was a professional punter. I'm not going to name his name. He was the king of Victoria through my young years. No, he was untouchable. I would personally speak to like one of the leading bookmakers at the time when I was working for an organisation. His name was Bill Graham. He was on the rails. He used to take the Packer bets and the Lloyd Williams bets, right? But he said to me, when this guy used to walk in the ring, he would tremble. And he would take million-dollar bets, but this guy wasn't betting a million. He was betting less than that, but he would tremble. Why? Because the guy never lost often and won more than he lost and made lots of money. Then, and now, I had the good fortune, years later, to sit with him. And I'm no journalist, right? Yep. But I know how to ask questions. So I was just wanted to learn, like, what happened? Why? You reigned for more than a decade, the best and the biggest punter in Victoria. What happened? Well, this is what he said. Now, I had to add some things because I knew he wasn't being completely honest.
Yeah. Right?
And what I mean by completely honest, not dishonest about what happened, about the other things that he forgets to attach, right? And this is what happened to him. He said, Vince, I lost all my fortune in 2 weeks. That was over the spring carnival. He had a couple of big bets that failed, and all of a sudden he was more than one down. And obviously then they do on the nod, and then you settle, right?
Yep.
And then he said, oh, you know, I'm good for it. Another, you know, 300, 400, 600, 800. And in that period of 2 weeks, before he woke up, he was 4 or 5 down.
Ruin is forever.
Right. And then can't pay.
Yep.
And then the problems begin. Then you have to sell up your assets, do all those things, try and, you know, then you're having fights in your marital status and all those sort of things. And I said to him, it's very interesting. How did you lose your grip in that 2 weeks? It couldn't have been the races. Yeah, well, I said, no. I said, look, it just can't be. I said, there would have been other instruments that had made you happen. I said, were you a good boy? He goes, what do you mean? I said, were you a good boy? Did you, you know, chase other things? Were you on, you know, the things that put you into fantasy world? Were you on that stuff? Oh, yeah, I had this, and I go, yeah. And what, you never worried about, you know, the opposite sex even though you were married? Oh, yeah, I go, yeah, there you go. And then I said, they're those things. I said, but how about the last thing? What else did you change in your process? And he goes, what do you mean? I said, well, I noticed as you were getting deep, you had all these guys working for you, and you weren't doing the detailed finish work of the form anymore, so you couldn't be as good. You couldn't be as sharp. And then you started living this high life, which might have been, I'm not saying beyond you, but just a little bit. So this is what happens when you've got money, right? It can go beyond you unless you've got something to really push you down. This is one of the things that I liked about my family. They made me understand whether you had $1 or $1 million, shut up and work hard, right? Don't start looking, I'm rich. Anything can happen. That would remind me all the time. There could be a war. There could be this. And then you're down to zero. How would you be? So be humble. Shut up. work hard, and in the end of the picture, you'll be fine and you'll look after the next generation and your life will still be nice. Because if you don't do that, the alternative is very bad. And then he said, yeah, you know, I've got these buyers doing the form, and because that allowed him to do other things because he had money, Ralphie. Yep. And then he started bringing in things that he wouldn't normally do that he didn't do when he was successful. So, and now he still has a little bit of a bet, but it's like pennies. And he says, oh, yeah, you know, I'm doing something in WA Maiden. Or, you know, I was going, wow. And I love the bloke, right? Yeah. I love the guy in the sense that he was a great person for racing, but it was really, really sad for that to happen. And he's not the same anymore. So this is the thing about the old story that you once you're broken, you cannot be the same person you were, because a good part of you goes. You see, a little bit goes when, you know, you go to dark places. Every time you go to a dark place, a little bit of you dies. And once you get too far, Ralphie.
Well, that's the point. Exactly. Ruins forever. But yep. All right. And I did, we just riff. We don't know where we start podcasts sometimes. But one point I want to make, because you actually said something off here on Sunday about why others aren't doing it. No one else says don't bet on this race because everyone else is sponsored by corporate bookmakers. We're not. We're completely independent people. We don't criticize. People run their own race. But this is what we do. And that's why we've got fantastic members, Vince, because we don't have any advertising. And we're prepared to say this race is too hard. This isn't for us.
Well, Ralphie, I can just sit there and bullshit.
Yep.
And just make it all look glory. But at the end of that, because you have to live and die by your own sword, I already know what your outcome will be. It will be horrific. You'll be so upset with yourself, and that's another way to ruin. So be honest. And the only way I can be honest is just to be me. Now, sometimes that doesn't suit everybody, but I'm not here to try and suit everybody. I'm just here to say, this is me. You've got to then work it out yourself where you want to be and what you do. Like, I mentor a number of guys, Ralphie, for, you know, in the form work and things like that. And the easy thing to do is for me to help them just with the selections, right?
Yeah.
Because actually find the winner's not hard. But to bet is very complicated. But if I start doing that, they will never make it. And they want to make it. So you have to row the boat pretty much on your own the majority of time. You give some advice, you give some pointers. And what I've been noticing is this, Ralphie, because I speak to a number of people and they're good form students. Please understand me. They've got plenty of ability. They're smarter than me. I'm not that smart, Ralphie. I am not that smart. I'm just a normal guy. But what happens is this. And this is the trap I used to be when I was young. I don't know. It just must be horse racing. You're always just trying to find the template that fits. And if it's 7 days back up or 21 days, that must fit for all horses. And I've learned, no. It's fluid. Every race is its own unique moment. And you have the history to look at. Doesn't mean that's what's going to be replicated into the future.
Stats aesthetic.
Yeah. So, you know, you see also you can handle the heavy. Can you really?
Yeah.
Some can when it gets the heavy 20 and others can't.
Well, that's what Magic the Time did last April and she did it again today. But look, there's not much we can learn other than be careful with your money on bog heavy tracks. As you said, the times are applicable to Warrnambool in May, and that's when Warrnambool in May cop a real deluge. So there's not much we can learn on from those meetings. We can from a couple others. What I'll do, Vince, look, I haven't run this past you, but people who bought our preview on Saturday because they didn't get a fair fight, what about if I send them a real race meeting, which was at Ascot with a cocker? Can I send them the IVR data?
Absolutely. Be humble and gracious, Ralphie.
That's it. So from that IVR data, of course, is the Quokka. And that was a real race on a real good track. And we've got quite a few members' questions from that, of course. Brenton's come on from another race, which is a good, interesting talking point. But Chris has asked if Amelia's Jewel is a Stradbroke type over 1400. And Tim has said, did Amelia Jewel race flat from the previous run? As outlined, she was punished to run second first up. Now, Vince, before you answer that, sometimes we're Monday's experts and sometimes we're Monday's experts before the race. And this was what you said on our Group 1 bonus podcast 2 weeks ago about Amelia's Jewel's run.
And here we are. It's going 2.9 lengths below benchmark. And I said, this ride looks a little bit too pretty, right?
Yeah.
And then between the 8 and the 4, puts in the extension, 6.8 above, 9.7 length mid-race squeeze, and he's scouting wide looking like it looked like he was looking for lanes. And then he's finished off last 400, 6.2 above. Now, mind you, this is where I could see where I didn't like the ride on the horse. You could just see there between the 4 and the 2, the horse lost 1.4 lengths. And then he's rebounded with a 4.2 last year. Now, I have to say, he really did ask for a massive effort. Four Amelia's Jewel over the last 200. You could see it. It almost looked like he was trying to redeem himself because he knew he'd made an error in his riding. You could just see it. And then I listened a little bit more carefully about what was happening earlier. One of the commentators was saying that Simon Miller communicated he felt the horse is going fantastic and had put on 40 kilos. I know people talk about weights and that, but he's 40 kilos bigger. Now, what could that do to the horse? Well, I reckon the horse gave everything that it had to the line. Now, the yard watchers made it pretty clear the horse was still carrying a bit in the race. So, no doubt, you know, this was like the final tune-up. But I don't reckon that would have been the sort of race Simon Miller would have really wanted for his horse to go into a major race in 2 weeks' time. Because this is big, big extension, like a very big extension.
So it's the type of thing where you'd say 3 weeks perfect. Is that fair?
Two weeks. It'll be interesting to see how Simon handles it.
And there it was, Vince. She didn't have that real spark in her legs, seemingly to the eye. So a couple of things for people picking that up for the first time. If you want to be a member, you can go to my website, racetrackalfie.com.au, click through the links. Our members get a members bonus most weeks. And when we got good information, we tell our members directly. And what your outline was, that was not the ideal race shape if you've got a race in 2 weeks.
No. And here's a new thing that I've been, well, when I say new, it's new in the sense that it's been plaguing me a little bit. And it's been plaguing me actually with this horse. This is the one that's got me thinking a lot about it. And this is Amelia's Jewel. If you recall how I said to you, Ralphie, that the horse had put on 40 kilos, right?
Absolutely.
And now the old age story about when I was just trying to understand about, you know, why a lot of horses don't go to the next level, what happens? And the more I've been thinking about this, especially bringing Amelia's Jewel into place, even though that horse like was, you know, really, really straining to get past the winner, which it didn't, besides the possibility of not the ideal race, also I was trying to understand how much more of that 40 kilos could you get off, you know, into your next race.
And this is an important overview that you've really outlined when people say about weight, oh, it's going up 1 kilo or 2 kilos. Well, okay, how much does the whole horse weigh? Because the whole horse's weight is part of the equation.
Well, it is, you see, and this is – now we're talking something, right? We're talking something. We're not talking a kilo or two. Well, there's no way he could have got the 40 kilos off, right? So how much –
you're referring to Simon Miller in an interview said that that's what she's put on during the break.
Yeah, so I'm – And for him, it's a bigger, stronger horse, which it could be. But that could also make you a slower horse.
Yeah.
And there was just something in that run first up. And maybe it was, again, it could be just a mental observation that because I'm associating the 40 kilos, right?
Yeah.
And really, when I look at like what happened on the weekend, the speed that was traveling at, 1.8 lengths above benchmark through that first section, well, at Caulfield was traveling 3.2 above. I don't believe it's right way of the horse delivering its best either, by the way.
Going forward?
Well, not so much going forward. It's about how fast you go when you're going forward, what pace. So if you're at a pace like that day at Ascot back in October 22, first section plus 3.6, second section plus 1.7, last 400 metres plus 2.3. This is a really good one to look at.
Because you got the point up. Darren's asked us, I backed Overpass at a crazy $7 win, $2.20 the place. I'm interested in whether they made an error on Amelia's Jewel. Riding the horse on pace, not allowing the normal distribution of energy, may have been an error. Got its ideal race shape off a fast pace to sit back and unleash final 400. Didn't appear to have that being used up early. So again, someone like Damien Lane rides a race to win that race. He didn't want to die wondering. So seemingly he gave it every chance, but what does the clock say?
Well, here's the thing about every chance. Where it was drawn, the options were going to be pretty simple. You either go forward or out the back.
Yes. That's the context, isn't it? That's important.
And it is so important. So I felt that they didn't make the wrong move going into a four position. Now, plus 1.8 through the first section is a pace that this horse can handle.
Yep.
So it's not beyond it. At 1,200 metres, it's not beyond it. It's within it. Now, I'm coming from a different content in terms of when I'm examining that. I'm learning to try and understand, okay, what's the overall impact? Now, the races run pretty fast overall. Lead speed was plus 4.9. Overpass is going 3.3 above. Amelia's Jewel's going 1.8 above. And Oscar's Fortune, 1.2 above. So there's good pace. This is where things really get tough, though. When the pace is sustained in the mid-race, this is the true pressure, what they used to say in the old days about wait for age racing.
Yeah.
It can be like that in handicap. If there's mid-race pressure from fast speed, it becomes very tough for everybody, right? So it can affect you and impact you very, very late. And unfortunately, there was strong pressure in the mid-race. I mean, Overpass actually was able to maintain its pace. Well, went from 3.3 above, well, 3.4 above, actually increased it by 0.1, and then started to actually deteriorate. The last 400 metres was 2 lengths slower than what it was between the 8 and the 4, and the drop-off was Amelia's Jewel. And here's the thing, you could just see, unfortunately for Damien Lane, he overreached in the mid-race. So he went from plus 1.8 to plus 4.2, and that catapulted him to have less at the end. Now, when I say less at the end, his overall last 400 was actually as good as Overpass, which is a very, very positive sign. But if I look at the drop-off, see, when you get inside the 600 and you hit the 400-meter mark, Overpass is 2.1 above, Amelia's Jewel's 2.8. Then when you look at the de-acceleration to the finish line, this is the distribution of energy, Amelia's Jewel's lost 2.6 of energy and Overpass has lost 2 lengths. There is one way where you start to understand the insight about like the distribution of energy, and this is all factored in by that slight overreaching in the mid-race. Maybe, I guess he had to if he wasn't going to.
Yeah, he could touch the leaders, yeah.
Yeah, if he couldn't do that coming, you know, into the home turn and say, okay, let's put yourself, it's a grand final, right? You've got to go.
Yep.
So obviously Simon Miller had the horse rock hard fit. Overall performance, in my view, was commendable. It was a plus 3. Yes, that big sprint that we normally see isn't there because of the dynamic change in the way the horse is ridden.
So energy in, energy out. That obviously took it out of it. Is this a case? I reckon it's the same with I Wish I Win, even though they won a TJ. That was a fast TJ on a very heavy track, the Nature Strip set up. This year he couldn't win the TJ on a slow tempo, and he had every chance in the Everest. Is it the same but different with Amelia's Jewel, that really she's a mile a star, but, and fair enough, this is zero criticism, because there's such huge prize money at 1,200, they're trying to turn her into a 1,200 horse to try and win that 1,200.
Well, and this is the new challenges that we have as form students, right, is how do we deal with it? Now, when we look at the score and the overall performances of Amelia's Jewel, Amelia's Jewel did have a 3.6 above benchmark overall performance leading into that 1,200 metres. So from that perspective, you know that the horse can at least run to that level. Well, on the weekend,
well, Overpass has done 3.9. So what you're saying basically is still Overpass probably beats her, however she's ridden.
Yes, in the end, this is exactly the thing. And then I ask you the question: you've come back 40 kilos stronger, bigger, and better. But I've already put some notes down saying, "Well, I'll be interested to see if you can actually reach whatever your peaks were in the past." Now.
I know it's a weird analogy, but go with me here. So on Friday, I did a lunch with the great Dustin Fletcher, the Essendon fullback.
Yes, yep.
He said his weight varied from 79 kilos when he started, he was a schoolboy, got up to 102 kilos in the early noughties, because back then the full forwards didn't have to cover as much ground. So all you had to do was wrestle, you know, the big monsters like Neitz and Lynch. And then towards the end of his career, he's back down to 90 kilos because he had to run further. So it's actually the same. What you're talking about is an athlete, if they're heavy, it's a bigger challenge. And we've seen that in two-legged athletes. This is the same with four-legged athletes is what you're saying.
Well, what happens is, yeah, if you put on 40 kilos of real power and strength, right?
Yep.
Depending on where you are in your age, and this is a four-year-old mare, so it's just grown and become stronger, there has to be some sort of an impact initially on how you manage and carry that weight, so that changes your aerobic breathing. And the reality is it dulls a little bit of your sprint. It just has to, right? Because it's not 1 kilo or 2 kilos, it's 40, right? It has to have some sort of an impact. Now, there will be a point in time that you become that and you learn to get all your right rhythm and balance back and your energy in terms of your breathing to where it should be, and there is a possibility you might reach that milestone. Now, usually what happens is some horses that are a bit thin frame, smaller frame, they don't do that much, and then as they naturally grow, get bigger, stronger, and better, they become much faster because that's what they needed to become better horses, but they might have gone from -5 to benchmark, right?
Yep.
They didn't go from +6 down and then the plus, then they're usually when those horses come, I'm assuming they go the other way. So I don't know, you know, Amelia's jaw, I'm just sitting here. I'm just going to be fascinated to see what happens. Now, maybe you got 20 kilos of that off. But
well, she's heading east, and whether east. She goes to the Goodwood or to the Stradbroke, we'll cover it anyway. Yeah,
that's fantastic.
I think that was their last run for Simon Miller. If I've only scanned the papers on this
right.
one. I think that was her farewell as a WA trained horse.
Oh, and so then, after
I think,
it?
I think Chris Weller. I think it's Chris Weller. Apologies if I got that wrong. But, that'll be fascinating because he goes all right with older mares too. But by the way, I just want to back the truck up. Zero criticism for Simon Miller. I'm just saying
that.
I know she's moving. Okay, couple of things. So this week, preview podcast, the Sangster, South Australia, and there's a little two set and forget option because we're also going to do the Goodwood 2 weeks after that. So the two Group 1 South Australian sprints will be this week and 2 weeks after that, and you can get that via my website, racetrackralphie.com.au. If you're a Daily Sectionals customer and you've already got the final edition, you will get an option just to get the audio only. Now, a couple of little nuggets from Ascot. As I said, if you bought the preview podcast last week, you'll get the IVR report, but we'll also do a little Group 1 members bonus podcast because there's a couple at Ascot that made my eyebrows raise, and also we'll just ask you a couple of questions because there were some highlights at Mornington that actually raced pretty well as well. So if you're a Group 1 member, you'll get that. You don't have to do anything. If you want to become a Group 1 member, like I said, go via my website. In the meantime, thanks so much for listening to the Year Round Carnival.